Then welcome to the late night show here in Hall Glitch at the 38C3. I'm very proud to present to you people that are very important for net neutrality. They are fighting for years to gain it and to keep it. The talk is called Net Neutrality, Why It Still Matters More Than Ever. And they will present Epicenter Works and Gesellschaft für Freiheitsrechte, and they are called Thomas and Jürgen. Please give a warm round of applause for them for the talk.
Thank you so much. As you might have seen in the program, we were actually supposed to be three people here on stage. Sadly, Raquel Renan-Nunes from Article 19 couldn't make it, but this will not stop us. We'll still go ahead with the talk. So we'll be a little bit more spontaneous, but yep. I think that's good. The issue that we'll talk about is net neutrality. And maybe we should start with a short introduction. Net neutrality is the concept that really sets the internet apart from all previous telecommunication networks. It is the principle that distinguishes it from a telephony network where you have a central control point that decides whether you're allowed to make that call and how much it costs. It also gives us the possibility to not just receive information like in television, but also to send it, to be in a bidirectional relationship with the rest of the world. And this principle is enshrined in law in many jurisdictions around the world. And we also want to take a quite global approach to the issue here. And without further ado, we will start with the issue of zero rating. This is Raquel's part, so I'm trying my best to cover for her here. Bear with me. And we should first start with a definition of zero rating before we come to disinformation. Zero rating is basically the practice of internet service providers to apply a price of zero to certain apps, or in other words, to exclude them from your monthly data cap. If you only have 2 or 10 or 20 gigabytes a month, zero rated apps wouldn't count towards that data cap. Basically, an infinite amount of music streaming or messaging services. And this is a common practice. It is outlawed in many jurisdictions like Europe, Canada, or India. But it is quite common, and particularly we see this practice in countries where there's a certain type of structure when it comes to how you buy internet access. Most people in Western countries will have at least one fixed line connection in their home. And if you look towards other regions, you can see that actually this is very unusual for Africa, for the Americas, if you exclude the United States and Canada, and also many Arab or Asian countries. And knowing that fixed line is quite a rare thing, what is actually quite common there is mobile connections. So most people around the world are actually using the internet via mobile connection. That also means mostly on their smartphone and not on a desktop PC. It gets even more interesting, and these are all ITU figures, by the way. If you then look how much it actually costs, and what is the best metric for this, as a percentage of the average household income. And again, here in Europe, we are in a luxurious position to spend not even 1%, half of 1%, for our monthly internet subscriptions when it comes to mobile. Whereas in Africa, it is 4 up to 5%, and so it's almost double of what the Broadband Commission affordability target would be. So like the international recommendation would be 2% of your monthly income, that's what goes towards an internet subscription, and the reality in many countries is that this is far more expensive, and therefore people are priced out of buying a normal internet connection. So what happens then? Zero rating comes back into play. And zero rating is very often combined with only a certain amount of applications that are excluded from data cap. And the most common one are actually messaging apps, WhatsApp being the front runner by far. And so you have quite a few countries in the world where a few things come together. You have a strong dominance of WhatsApp. Not so much Telegram, not so much Signal, so it's all concentrated on this one messaging app that belongs to Meta, to Facebook. Second, mostly the people there use internet via mobile, and mobile is expensive. That means you might only have internet for like half of the month. And afterwards, you are out of data volume. But you can still use WhatsApp. What does this mean? Basically, WhatsApp is your only connection to any form of media. And this is not just communication peer-to-peer from people-to-people. This is also replacing classical news sites. We're not even talking about paywalls in local newspapers. You wouldn't be able to access the web page of your local newspaper, but you can be sent WhatsApp messages. What does this lead to? Of course, politicians and marketers are very much aware of this reality, and we have seen a lot of trends where politicians, like here the president of Mexico, are creating dedicated channels for WhatsApp to mobilize their constituency, to message out whatever they want to the people to read. We have this guy here to the left, who's actually the Cambridge Analytica founder, who is also in this business. We have dedicated campaigns for elections that are driven over WhatsApp. And stage four of this trap of disinformation is that we see in many jurisdictions around the world, from Brazil to many Arab countries, to many African countries, to Asian countries, that disinformation is spread via WhatsApp. And this really creates an echo chamber and a prison for many people to be stuck in this type of information prison, where you are fed disinformation. Even if you would want to check the sources, even if you would like to have an independent secondary information, you would be unable to do so. If nobody in your social circle physically could say, oh, actually, that's wrong, this number is wrong, this never happened, you wouldn't be able to fact check. Jürgen, have I forgotten anything?
No, basically, and we see this as well in Europe and Germany. We all have these family members who send us things on WhatsApp that they think a good friend just forwarded to them, so they are trustworthy. That friend thought another friend, and so that's how this disinformation spread. You're getting a message from someone who think is trustworthy, and so you're like outraged. You're like, I cannot believe this, and so you forward it. And this is happening in a world where no one can actually check what is happening. So this just spreads, like you said, like wildfire, and is completely used to manipulate elections, to shape civic discourse, and so forth.
And that's why there is a connection, a strong one, we would say. Disinformation is often looked at fact-checking. We need to bring more truth and counter-narratives towards the internet. But the infrastructure layer is what we would like to shine a light on. Because if you fail at the infrastructure layer, if telecom operators make dirty deals with Facebook so that only WhatsApp is the channel to get any news ahead of an election, it could get very dangerous for democracy quite quickly. This is why we are very happy that people in Colombia, for example, are taking to the Constitutional Court. El Vente, a local consumer protection organization, has actually brought forward a Constitutional Court case to outlaw zero rating. And this has been happening before. Like in Europe, our colleague Susanne Blum from the German Consumer Protection Organization managed to really kill zero rating in all of Europe. And we hope that this case in Colombia could be a similar watershed moment to actually outlaw this practice and change the narrative around this. Let's go to the next issue, 5G. 5G is the fifth generation of mobile networks you all have on your phones. Most likely 4G or 5G right now. And this new generation of mobile networks was quite hyped. You might have seen this telecom lobbyist jargon about how it would change economies and Industry 4.0 and all of that. A lot of that is just buzz and hype that has no real materialization. But there are some technological features with 5G that pose a challenge to net neutrality. Simply speaking, the one characteristic that we want to talk about is network slicing. So you are slicing the network towards individual separate networks that might be really good for low latency or high availability, low energy consumption. So they are tuned for certain purposes. And once you have not just one internet connection where everything is piped through with the same quality, but suddenly you have a priority fast lane, the question arises, who decides, who has control, which app gets to use which slice? We would strongly argue, and the European telecom regulators agreed with us in 2018, that it should be the users, all of us, to decide who gets to use which network slice. Telecom companies disagree. They want to be in control and decide which apps gets to use which network slice. And the most prominent example here in Germany is Deutsche Telekom, which very recently started this 5G gaming subscription model, where you are faced with a really great network slice for gaming. It has low latency and very reduced ping times. And of course, they are the ones to decide which apps get to use that. It's not the user who's in control. And in our opinion, this is a clear net neutrality violation. And this is an upcoming fight that we'll most likely see pop up in other jurisdictions as well. But the real big fight, the one that is already spanning around the globe, is the fight around termination monopolies. And to explain that, we actually have to go back a little bit in history. Telecom companies used to be telephony companies. They sold us the beautiful ability to make phone calls. And there is something very wrong in the way in which that market worked. Whenever I'm calling Jürgen, my telephone company would pay his telephone company to terminate the phone call. So if I'm with a small network provider that only has like a handful of customers and Jürgen is with a very big one, an incumbent, his operator would actually make a lot of money by just sitting on their hands and just basically collecting money that comes in via all of these calls that they get to terminate. This was really bad for competition. This really destroyed the agility of the market. And it is not the way the internet works. In the internet, you have a system called bill and keep. You basically get your money from your own customers. But again, coming back to Deutsche Telekom, they proposed the opposite. They proposed that wherever data flows, money should flow. This is actually an original Deutsche Telekom slide that I used in my first talk here at 30C3. And in a way, it's still true. And it's exactly what they are fighting for right now in Europe and around the world. This system of sending party pays or termination monopolies or fair share, it has many names, but it's all the same. Wherever money flows, wherever data flows, money should also flow between networks. We have that in South Korea. South Korea is the only country in the world which implemented such a scheme several years ago. And it's quite telling because South Korea is also the country with the best network infrastructure in the world. They have a 100% fiber to the home penetration. There almost isn't a house where you don't have a fiber connection. So you would assume that everything is perfect there. But funny enough, in the last few years, latency has increased. The quality for the actual apps that you get to use over these internet connections gets worse every year, up to the point where now gamers complain in Korea that they can no longer compete because of the fucked up internet situation. And this really shows the dangers for our ability to use the internet, which net neutrality guarantees, and of course also the underlying internet infrastructure. This debate sadly made it to Europe. In 2022, Vice President of the European Commission, Margrethe Vestager, came out in support of this idea. She then later backtracked, but that allowed her subservient, Thierry Breton, former CEO of France Telecom, a big fan of the telecom industry, to really push this idea along and to make it like a very important European project. And he was very loud about that. He was pushing strongly. He wanted to see legislation, and he failed. His successor, Heina Virkkunen, is now in charge of the digital files at the European Commission, and it's now in her hands to decide whether we get to keep net neutrality or move in this old telephony era business model time back. And I want to explain a few arguments, what's wrong with this idea. As I explained earlier, this thing is called fair share. The argument telecoms operators are making is we have to handle all of the traffic of Google and Facebook and Amazon, and they should pay us for actually upkeeping the network, investing into the network. And who doesn't like taking money from big tech? That's the basic idea. But if you then look closer, the majority of internet traffic is actually towards video streaming, particularly if you use 4K or higher resolutions. E-commerce and search only make up 1% of the overall internet traffic, yet they are responsible for 87% of the revenues. So if you really were to tax just the traffic, it would be a huge win for Amazon and for Google. And so this is all but fair. And the other argument that's underpinning the telecom industry's demands is also not true. There isn't an increased cost of handling that data. The investment need to actually afford the network upkeep is quite stable. But because the technology is actually increasing year by year, you get to handle much more data because the same network equipment that you could buy 5 years ago and today costs the same but can handle much more traffic. As I explained earlier, it would also be bad for the ability from small telecom operators to compete. So it would be actually bad for affordability because only competition keeps prices low. And some other problems with this idea of fair share or network fees is that whenever the content providers don't pay, there will be a consequence. I mean, don't kid ourselves. Like, we ask these big corporations to pay millions for every internet provider in Europe. They will fight tooth and nail not to pay that. And whenever they don't pay, of course service quality will be reduced. And that leads us to the violation of net neutrality, because it would reduce our ability to choose, our ability to use the internet as we see fit. And lastly, the whole idea is also flawed in terms of attribution, because just the fact that network traffic flows between Deutsche Telekom and some content delivery network doesn't mean that it is this particular company or another. There are 80 up to 100,000 autonomous systems that make up the internet. So this is all but a two-sided market. It's a 100,000-sided market. And there's also things like Disney Plus, who are in some countries as big as Netflix, but they don't have their own network. They use several CDNs to distribute their content. How would you make them pay? And if the CDNs pay, suddenly all of our governments, e-education services, all of the small and medium companies in Europe would also have to pay, because Hetzner and Cloudflare would have to increase their prices. If you're using Tor, VPNs, or Apple Privacy Relay, you simply make it impossible to attribute your traffic. And so all of that led to this huge coalition of NGOs, regulators, countries, and a huge chunk of the industry that are opposing network fees. A friend of mine once commented, this is a coalition big enough to invade Iraq. We have Creative Commons and the Motion Picture Association, the copyright mafia. We have Wikimedia and Paramount. We have the gaming industry. We have the internet exchanges. We have the sports rights associations, all of the public and all of the private broadcasters. Everyone is opposed to this idea. Yet, Mario Draghi, in his very famous report about making Europe competitive, or keeping it competitive, where he said, we need to invest billions in order to keep us rich in Europe, one of his recommendations was to establish exactly this idea. So the telecom industry got a huge victory in their lobbying with him backing their claims. Yet, they did not succeed. In the recent conclusions of the Council of the European Union, they stress the importance of net neutrality. They stress that any regulatory measure, including dispute resolution mechanisms, which is currently what the Commission is favoring, need to be based on facts, which is EU speak for go away, this doesn't work. So yes, we could protect net neutrality in Europe once again, but the fight will continue in the next 4.5 years. Sadly, it hasn't stopped here. We already have this stupid, dangerous idea in Brazil, in public consultations in India, with the regulator TRAI, and very recently in Colombia. So there is a lot happening here that should still keep us worried and requires our attention, but we have more planned for you.
Thank you, Thomas. Now on to our final chapter. Let's stay a little bit in this realm of who pays. So I'm watching Netflix, I'm having a Zoom call, I'm using a cloud service, and do I just pay for it, or does Zoom pay as well? So we heard already, like, in the international sphere, very, very concerning. In Europe, for now, a victory, but let's not rest on that. And now let's just focus on Germany a little bit. So we heard that Germany opposes fair share. So everything's good, right? Well, there's this little magenta-colored telecommunications service provider that thinks differently. And now, I thought about explaining to this to all of you, and I'm a lawyer, so I wanted to do it in a very, very legalized way. Luckily for you, Thomas and Raquel intervened here, and so instead I decided to do the second best thing, something that all my good teachers always did. I'll show you a video.
Does this sound familiar? You want to visit a website, but it just won't load. You start wondering, is it the Wi-Fi? Or maybe the website is overloaded? Or a drunken fisherman snagged an undersea cable? But what probably doesn't cross your mind is that your internet provider could be intentionally slowing down your connection just to make more money. Sounds crazy, right? But if you're paying Deutsche Telekom to connect you to the internet, that's the reality. Here's how it works. You pay your internet provider to connect you to websites and online services worldwide. If a connection to its network is regularly overloaded, the capacity is simply expanded. Everything runs smoothly and you can enjoy your Netflix evening in peace. No money changes hands. This is standard practice in Germany, Europe, and the rest of the world. But not with Telekom. They're saying to online services, oh, this connection is getting pretty overloaded. Wouldn't it be a shame if 40 million German internet users couldn't reach you as easily anymore? Just like that, Telekom is pressuring online services into overpriced contracts. Deep-pocketed services that pay Telekom continue to work just fine, but websites and services that can't afford these fees often load slowly or stutter. And suddenly, you're no longer free to choose which website and services you can use without interference. That means the Telekom is violating net neutrality, the principle that all content on the internet should be equally accessible. And Telekom fails to deliver what you're paying for, a fast connection to the entire internet. All this just because Telekom double dips when you use the internet by charging you and the online services, the only German internet provider to do so. If you believe that all websites and online services should be equally accessible to everyone and that authorities should finally put a stop to Telekom's practices before other internet providers follow their example, visit netzbremse.de for a neutral, free and fast internet for everyone.
All right. At this point, I want to say thank you. At this point, I want to say thank you to Alexander Lehmann for this amazing video, and which basically did my job for me, so that's always good. So just to have a short recap, so what is happening? You are the provider of content or an application, and you want to reach customers from the Deutsche Telekom. Deutsche Telekom has roughly 40% of the market share in Germany. So basically, if you want to reach German customers, you have to go via them. And so they'll tell you, like, yeah, of course, you can always enter our network. That's not the issue. But the issue is, if you do not pay us money, you can still enter, but it will be very slow. And for you, that's, of course, a problem, because the customers at the very end, they'll not think the problem is of the Telekom. They'll think the problem is of you, and they'll switch to anyone else on the market, and so that's a huge problem for you. So at the end of the day, you probably have to pay. From a customer perspective, what does it actually mean from them? So I'm a customer of the Deutsche Telekom, and due to this, I kind of have access to two different kinds of internet. The normal, in Germany, not always very fast, but still relatively fast internet that we all know. And then a second internet, kind of 1992, you know, modem times, you can kind of cook some coffee while you're loading a page, and who decides which internet you're accessing? Well, it really depends on which service you're using. If it's a service that pays for it, it's fast. If not, back to modem times. And this is happening a lot. So to people using Canva, to people gaming, but also to researchers. So what we did is we collected a lot of cases on this. And we already have over 100 of these complaints of people saying, well, something's wrong here. My service is very, very slow. And we talked about net neutrality all the time so far, and now, once again, as a lawyer, I have to throw some law at you, but once again, don't worry. We'll just cover this quickly. So is this actually legal? And so the concept of net neutrality is set down in law in the European Union, in the Open Internet Regulation, in Article 3 specifically. And I just put up here two specific subsections of it. And to summarize, there is the right for end users to access information completely irrespective of where that information, so that data, is coming from. So you have a right to choose. Are you watching Netflix? Are you using Canva? Are you using some other service? And you can do all of this equally. At the same time, there's an obligation on the providers of internet access services, so the Deutsche Telekom, not to discriminate between those services. So not to discriminate, basically, if whether someone pays or not. That's net neutrality poured into law. So, but, well, then that is clearly illegal, isn't it? So why isn't there anything happening? Well, you know, isn't there someone responsible to enforcing this kind of law, we thought ourselves? And yes, indeed, there is. The Federal Network Agency, Bundesnetzagentur, is responsible for that. And overall, they're definitely doing a great job. But we thought in this area, they might need a little nudging. And so that's why we decided and stuck our heads together and thought, what can we do? And we do have an announcement to make here right now. And this is that we're handing in a complaint based on this. To finally get this process started, we, that is Epicenter Works, Gesellschaft für Freiheitsrechte, in addition to the Verbraucherzentrale Bundesverband, which is Germany's largest consumer protection agency, and the amazing Stanford professor Barbara van Schewick. And so we're handing in this complaint, and now you're like, this is interesting information, but how can you help? And thanks for asking. We do have some ways for you to help. First of all, do you have a contract with the Deutsche Telekom? Well, you might join our complaint if you want to. If you are a network engineer, we already said we already have over 100 cases, but definitely we can use more, so send us data. And of course, if you know more, you can always blow the whistle, of course, completely confidentially. But last but not least, to anyone in this room, to anyone out there, just support us by joining our newsletter, spreading the word, and of course, you can always do a financial contribution as well. And how do you do all of this? Well, by visiting the webpage, which was already announced a little bit earlier, www.netzbremse.de, and actually the day after tomorrow, we are going to have a workshop here at 2 o'clock at Saal 5. The workshop is going to be in German, and we can definitely exchange our ideas. We can answer your questions there. But of course, we'll answer some questions here already right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Thomas and Jürgen, for your awesome talk. And we have time for a few questions. So if you have a question, please line up. We have microphone 1, 2, 3, and 4. And of course, also, we would like to ask the internet for questions. And we start with microphone 1, please.
Yes. Hello, and thank you very much for this very nice talk. My question is whether you think, or would you say, that the peering between different ISPs is covered by net neutrality?
It's a really good question, one that our complaint will also answer in detail. But just to summarize here, I think it is inherently covered by net neutrality because no internet access service could function without the interconnection and the definition that we find in the Open Internet Regulation for what an internet access service is. And even Jürgen showed that in the right of end users, it is always connection to virtually all endpoints and the right to access and distribute information irrespective of destination or origination of the data. Hence, it would logically never follow to just have an internet access to one network. This is simply not internet, it would be only network access. And that's simply not what the telecom industry, or Deutsche Telekom in this case, is selling to us.
If I may add to that, well, of course we're convinced of that, otherwise we wouldn't file the complaint. So legally speaking, so there is hasn't been like one, the one decision that says that yet. But if you think about it logically, if we set out such a rule that basically prohibits discrimination on a certain level, and that is definitely clear, we have decisions on that, but then you say, but on the level behind that, you can suddenly discriminate, which has the exact same effects. That seems to be at least very odd, I would say.
We have a question from the internet. Signal Angel, please.
Yeah, here is one question from the internet, and it goes way back to the beginning of the talk. Doesn't prohibiting zero-cost connections just make internet entirely unavailable? Fake news just travel via speech but still cannot be fact-checked.
Yeah, this is a very common question in the debate about zero rating in countries where affordability of internet access is a problem. And there are various answers to this. First and foremost, we can point towards regulatory proceedings like Canada, which looked into this question and found that actually zero rating is not an helpful asset in order to provide connectivity. We also see in the countries where we do have this problem and zero rating, it doesn't actually help with bringing more people into the internet. And this is, of course, true of the simple WhatsApp messaging services, but also for things like Free Basic. It used to be called internet.org and is Facebook's replacement of the internet, basically a walled garden. And then it's very important from a justice perspective to highlight that actually giving users access to just a handful of services is not cheaper than giving them access to the whole internet. You still need to build the network, you need to manage the subscription, and then you additionally also have to limit the data traffic to just those applications that you allow people to use. Why not simply have a low bandwidth mode that is maybe not fast enough for many of the important applications that you would like to use, but that still allows you many text-based internet consumption and also messaging? So such a low bandwidth mode would be application agnostic, totally in line with net neutrality, and could solve the connectivity problem. And in effect, we also see that from the real data that we have, because there are many NDAs, it isn't the case that Facebook is actually paying to have their messaging services zero-rated. So this is really much more a marketing tool for both sides, the telecom operators, and of course Facebook to cement their market dominance, than it is really a form of charity to subsidize the connectivity of people that otherwise couldn't afford it.
We have a lot of questions still, so maybe you are up for some questioning after the talk. So please keep it short. Number three, please.
Thank you very much. It seems like in certain countries where you actually have a lot of telcos, such as Denmark, that you have the telcos sort of diverging into also providing content. So you like buy a package where you get your Netflix subscription together with your telco subscription. Have you thought about addressing that as well as taking telecom to court here in Germany?
So that type of bundling per se would not be covered by the Open Internet Regulation, so it wouldn't fall under the legal or principle-based definition of net neutrality. Of course, this vertical integration can become a problem, particularly if you have a strong market concentration on the telecom level. That could lead to a lock-in situation, and many of the subscription-based models for Spotify and other streaming services are also kind of building onto that. But this, I think, and I mean, Jürgen, please correct me, would be something that you need to tackle under classical competition rules, but it wouldn't be necessarily something that would fall under net neutrality if there is no technical discrimination, like giving a fast lane to your own services, or economic discrimination, or like my music video streaming is excluded from monthly data caps.
Yep, so just basically confirming. It's a competition issue, and sometimes it's illegal. It really depends on the specific issues of the case.
Number four, please.
Hi, thank you for your talk. I'm trying to wrap my head around the definition of discrimination in the examples you showed, because it might end a little bit of a hot take. Is Deutsche Telekom actively discriminating when they're not providing more bandwidth to services like Netflix, so it ends up bottlenecking? Sorry.
And we explained that even in the video. So the normal practice in the interconnection market is that whenever a connection is saturated, you are upgrading the link. You're creating more capacity. And this is also something that is in almost all cases, like 99.99996 or something percent of the cases, it's settlement free. So there is no money is exchanging hands, because it is to the best of everyone's interest to have data flowing horizontally in a peering connectivity and not going via transit routes, for which most network operators have to pay. But a few very large network operators in their home markets, where they have the strongest dominance, are diverging from this principle. The internet is built on the idea that it is more than the sum of its parts. And hence, allowing data to flow across networks is inherently what even makes it a tool that also drives demands for internet access services and innovation and everything else we like about the internet. But here, a few of the very big telecom companies are diverging for their own monetary gains. So that's why we would say this business practice is actually in violation of net neutrality. It is a discrimination that has a negative effect on the ability of both end users like us to use and choose services, as well as on application and content providers to offer their services. And this is very often seen as like dangerous legal territory here, to use the bad word, but let's say it is not always easy for the application providers as well, because if you're not paying, then your users will have problems to access you via those networks.
We have one more question from the internet, and then we would like to ask you to ask your questions personally, if that's possible, after the talk. So please signal, Angels.
Yeah, here's another question from the internet. What are some data points or types that we can collect, or tools that we can execute that can help you?
That's your question.
So there are, this is certainly a bigger discussion, for which we would also point people towards the workshop that we'll have on day 4 at 2 p.m. What I can say is that anything that helps us to better understand the topology of the network, the commercial characteristics, also the differences between the network of Deutsche Telekom and other networks in Germany and Europe would be helpful. Any situation where there is a user harm or a harm of the content provider that can be measured. And I think there are many tools out there, like RIPE Atlas Probe and Traceroute and many, many others as well, that you could use in order to gather this evidence. We have done our best to collect this evidence, and we believe to have already sufficient to launch this complaint, but we know also from many discussions that this is a very deep rabbit hole. And so this talk is also meant as an invitation to anyone who has more insights into what's actually going on and what other perspectives are there. And this is not just recently, also from a historical perspective, we would be very interested to get into contact. On the website netzbremse.de, you'll also find email, signal, and Freema contact to reach out confidentially.
So please give a warm round of applause from our speakers, Jürgen from the Gesellschaft für Freiheitsrechte and Thomas from Epicenter Works. Thank you and good night. Thank you.